Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
And welcome to another edition of LGBT in the Ring, your rainbow bastion for all things pro wrestling. I am your host, Brian Bell, here with you once again on the Outsports Podcast Network. And we have a very, very powerful episode in store for you all today. We are sitting down with pro wrestler Joshua City. To have a very open and candid conversation about his journey back to the ring. Now, if you don't know Joshua, he began wrestling back in the early 2010s, wrestled for a few years in Texas mainly, and then in 2013 stopped because he learned that he had contracted HIV, and he was HIV positive. And it was a diagnosis that, you know, in his mind, basically ended his pro wrestling dreams, so to speak. But here, 8 or 9 years later from that moment, Joshua was able to step back into a ring again for the first time and have a match at Full Queer, the promotion that is run by one Marco Mayor of Money, Power, Respect, Fame. And it's truly a powerful moment that he had there, and put out a Facebook post about it and about a little bit about his feelings around it. And as soon as I saw that Facebook post, I knew we had to sit down with Joshua. Fun fact, Joshua is actually somebody who I've been trying to track down for a little while to have on this show. So I'm glad that the stars aligned here and we're able to have him come on and talk about his journey and tell his story about, you know, living with HIV and still wanting to chase that pro wrestling dream and using wrestling as a way of educating and raising awareness for the realities of HIV and living with HIV and how far the medicine and the science and everything has come to the point that, like Joshua himself, people can be undetectable and not spread the virus, even though they do have it. And all of that work to try and kind of destigmatize things as well, because as the last 40 some odd years have told us, stigmas around HIV and AIDS do not go away without intense work. And that's what Joshua has set himself up for. We also talk about his journey in pro wrestling as well, training under Lance Archer, and wrestling in Texas as an out gay man back then. And, you know, now his journey that's taken him to California to help keep chasing this dream. It's a really awesome conversation. I can't wait to share it all with you. Before we get there, though, I did make a little bit of an announcement on Twitter, and we have some housekeeping to get to, because I know Jason Joshua, you are not the only one who is chomping at the bit to learn some more information about this year's QWI 200 list and the 2022 QWI Awards. Obviously, it's that season. As I've alluded to many times on this show in the past month or so, the list is a work in progress right now as we speak. I am putting it together. I am writing everything as we go, and we are setting up for a release date. Now, I haven't shared the release date yet because we haven't had confirmation yet, but we do have confirmation now. So I can announce here today that the 2022 QWI 200 list, the top 200 out LGBTQ wrestlers for the year, will start being rolled out on December 9th through December 15th. Yes, it is the same format as last year. We are not changing the format at all. It will be a week-long release schedule with 30 wrestlers per day for the first 6 days. And then that last day, you get your top 20. To me, keeping the list at 200, that is the perfect way to unveil it, to not just completely overwhelm people. And also just, I don't know, it's fun. It's fun having multiple days to come back to these things and see where people land, see where your favorites land, and generate all of the fun and sometimes, crossing fingers, hopefully not for this list, toxic stuff that can come out of any pro wrestling list, as the people at PWI and I'm sure Reg with the BW 500 can attest to when it comes to these sort of things. I'm excited to have the list put together again this year and to have it out there for everyone to check out. So keep your eyes on outsports.com December 9th through the 15th. That's a Friday through a Thursday. And we're going to have a special episode of the podcast on the 15th, December 15th, to discuss the list once it's all out there for everybody. It's all public for everybody, and we can all start having the debate, which I hope will be superseded by the celebration of what this list represents and the power that is stored within it. That is always the goal when putting this together for myself, is just to showcase our community and show the people in our community that maybe don't know or need reminding just how far we've come and just what we are capable of whenever we are either given the ball or create our own ball in realms that we have historically not been welcomed in. It's amazing, and I cannot wait to share it all with you. Now, we do have one more thing to get to before we go to our interview with Joshua, and that pertains to the 2022 QWI Awards, the ones that are voted on by you, the fans, and the listeners of this podcast, although you don't have to listen to the podcast to vote. That's not a prerequisite. We do like the synergy, though. But those, obviously, the nominations are wrapping up today. So make sure if you have not submitted your nominations for all of the categories for the best in LGBTQ pro wrestling, go to the Google form that is out there. It's on, I believe it's pinned to both my Twitter account at WonderboyOTM and the show's Twitter account at LGBTRingBod, and vote for your favorites, because at midnight tonight, if you listen to this on Thursday, midnight tonight, those will close. Midnight Pacific, rather. So I guess 3 a.m. Eastern. Those will close. So as soon as the clock strikes over into November 18th, that is done. The nominations are closed, and then I will be tallying up the nominations over the weekend, and I can now announce for sure that the final ballot for the 2022 QWI Awards, as voted on by you, the fans, will be up and ready for everyone to vote on November 21st, the following Monday. So nominations end tonight at midnight Pacific. The 21st, that Monday, will give you something to do over Thanksgiving. Go and vote on the final ballot that will be compiled from the nominations that you all provide me. And we will keep that open until December 6th at midnight Pacific. So you get a little over 2 weeks there to check out the final ballot and vote for your favorites for the year. That will be compiled after that, and we will announce those the week after the QWI 200 list has been released. So I'll do my math in my head real quick. The December 22nd episode of the podcast will be our QWI Awards show, just like we did last year. And it's just, we're going to wrap up the season there and get ready for 2023. You know, I mean, I know it's probably wasn't the best idea to line all of these big projects up around the holiday season, but let me tell you, this has become part of my holiday season and part of the reason why I celebrate at the end of the year, honestly. And I do it out of love, because why else would you do it, honestly, right? Yeah. Well, remember, keep those dates in your brain. I'll be reiterating them on shows up until we're at those dates again for sure. But remember, listen to the show and keep your eyes on my Twitter account and the show's Twitter account for information on the QWI 200, the QWI Awards voting, rather. Yeah, so got that out of the way. The cat's out of the bag. Y'all can already start building your anticipation more and more, I guess. But for now, build your anticipation for my conversation with Joshua City. What's up, guys, gals, and non-binary pals? Welcome back to LGBT in the Ring. I am very pleased to have as my guest this week someone who recently made his return to the ring for the first time in nearly a decade in San Francisco at Full Queers. At Full Queers Folsom Street shows, Barrison
Street Fair.
Barrison Street Fair. Thank you so much for correcting me. I
you're all good.
Well, you already heard his voice. Joshua City's on the show today. Hi, Joshua. How you doing?
Hey, how's it going? I'm doing really good, honestly. Really excited for this interview. I'm really excited to sit down, talk about my story with you, and the fact that you feel the story is important to talk about, which I know I do. So,
no, 100% it is important to talk about, not just in terms of the pro wrestling aspect of it, but how we've seen pro wrestling interact with the LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm. And specifically with your story, you know, how the pro wrestling community and the community rather as a whole still interacts with people who are HIV positive.
Yes.
And you know, that I think that's really one of the key things that stood out to me whenever you made the Facebook post after your return at the Barrison Street Fair. Because I think as much knowledge as I have about all of the different personalities and people in the LGBTQ pro wrestling sphere, so to speak, you know, as I told you before we started recording, your name has come up in conversation here and there with different people as in terms of someone who would be a good guest on this show. And I had no idea that part of your journey was about your own personal journey with HIV and mm-hmm. wanting to come back into pro wrestling to spread the message that, you know, if you are undetectable and you can't transmit, that, you know, these stigmas around HIV in the pro wrestling world, they don't need to exist. There needs to be better knowledge about how HIV actually manifests in the body, based off of the new science and medications that are out there. So that was one of the huge things that jumped out to me, and we can get more into that right now, but just talk to me about that first moment kind of getting back into the ring.
Ooh, you know, it's really interesting. Because you would think it was even the moments afterwards, it just felt like I was getting back into the flow. Immediately, obviously there's a lot of ring rust. It'd been about a year since I had trained consistently. But getting back into the ring and doing it and finishing it, it was weird. I wasn't happy. I was angry. And I wasn't angry. It wasn't that it went wrong or anything. It's damn it. This is what I've been trying to do the whole time. I did it with ease. I came back with ease. I know what I'm doing, how to be safe to others, how to take care of them and do all of that. And why am I having to fight so hard to convince people? Over my time frame, the last year and a half, I have put information and documents and articles and doctor's notes, you know, in front of people, and still it is just, I don't know. And because, you know, wrestling isn't a sport, isn't Well, depending on the area, depending on what license you have to get. But because it's not a sport, it's more of a fraternity. They have the ability to just turn their back and close the door, and nobody's going to call them out on it. And because of the standards we've set in combat fighting as well, which wrestling gets compared to because of blood and different things like that, combat fighting, in fact, actually has a little archaic rulings as well, because, you know, as you said earlier, undetectable means untransmittable. Like, that's not an opinion, that is a stated fact by doctors. Not, they will even go to say it, you cannot transmit it. Not, there is this percentage, they say, no, you cannot transmit.
No, and like you said, it is scientific fact. Like, you know, there are multiple people in my life who are HIV positive, who are undetectable. And even just in like regular everyday life, they're still having to face like certain stigmas around that, without the added on complication of like the like physicality that comes with pro wrestling or combat sports in general. And I completely agree with you that like it's frustrating to see that people within these worlds still hold these stigmas when faced with the science that has steadily improved over the like the now four decades almost that we've faced since the initial AIDS epidemic hit in the 80s. But no, I think that like people that are outside of this sphere or who don't interact with people who are HIV positive on a daily basis don't know the extent that treatment and science has gone to be able to make people like you and so many other people undetectable and untransmittable in that way. I mean, hell, we're having like for the first time like this year, we're seeing advertised like the pharmaceutical advertisements that we see all the time. We're now seeing stuff for PrEP and there's like vaccines that are being developed.
That's taken about 10 years itself.
Yeah.
You know, but you are right there. So a lot of it comes down to the last time the public really saw anything through mainstream media was in the 80s and 90s, when it was an epidemic, when millions of people were dying from this, still in certain parts of the world are dying from it. That was the last time it was talked about in this giant public view. And so all of the knowledge, the information that we have is not in mainstream media, is not positioned that way. You know, even when I first found out that I was HIV positive, I remember a friend, one of my friends who helped train me. I remember him asking, so can I get it from drinking water after you? I'm like, no, you know, but it was an earnest question that he didn't know. And in reality, at the time, I had to learn because I didn't know anything about it. And I had to become as knowledgeable as I possibly could, because I wanted to be that person.
What were those resources that you went to kind of educate yourself about this? Because like you said, like there's not just kind of a general knowledge base out there. Like there's a severe lack of education around what HIV actually is in terms of like, you know, what it does to the body and how it can be transmitted and that sort of thing. Cause I'm just pull the curtain back. Like my father is HIV positive.
Okay.
And I like growing up, like I had, like I dealt with a lot of the same questions that you're talking about having, you know, and it bewildered me the extent in like the mid 2000s, much less whenever you're talking about you found out for yourself that we're still answering these same questions, not because like people are being like, you know, trollish or like being just doing something to get a rise out of people, but because there's just literally no education around this stuff to the point that people have to ask if like if you can get it by sharing the same water bottle with someone.
Yeah absolutely. So man, there's one I use now a lot, and it was, I can't think of his name off the top. I even wrote down all the names I thought I would need. but he was a professional rugby player that ended up becoming HIV positive. It's never really put out there if it was while he was still active or after he had retired. But he started tacklehiv.org. And I really try to push people to there because his whole thing is kind of educating, and it has like a whole test to where, you know, how do you think someone can get it? And it tells you how the rest of the world perceives it or believe the same way that you do and how that is actually incorrect. But when I first found out, it was one of those things, because I found out September 11th, 2013. Of
quite
all
a day.
Quite a day, man. Every emotion five times. It was one of the toughest days in my life. And it was really interesting because as soon as he told me, you know, he's like, okay, so, you know, we have these two dots here and that means that you're HIV positive and that's all I heard afterwards. You know, a friend comes in the room to console me and he's talking and I'm literally like, I can't wrestle anymore. The only thing I ever wanted to do, the only thing I wanted to chase after was wrestling, you know, and reached out to a promoter that I worked with consistently. And he's like, yeah, you can't wrestle with us anymore. I'm so sorry. Da, 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 da. And it was just this gut-wrenching thing to like, this is all I wanted to do. This is literally as unfeasible as it is sometimes. I wanted to be a professional wrestler. I wanted to work at the highest level. And I started like just researching and researching, finding whatever I could. And it's extremely hard. Even today, there's still, I still find some of the just handful of articles out there. And I can't think of off the top of my head what they are, but I would research HIV in professional sports, HIV in combat sports, HIV in just sports in general. And try to see like how it's handled, how it's dealt with. Is it allowed or is it not allowed? You know, one of the more famous stories is Magic Johnson in the NBA, you know, and he was able to play. So, you know, you go from there, you're like, okay, how does the NFL handle it? It is actually okay to be HIV positive and play a sport, you know, because if they're going to take care of anybody, like if anybody gets hurt, they're going to treat them as if they have it. And the chance to spread the virus in that realm is like so low, like almost impossible, like 0.001%, just because, you know, scientists are never gonna say yeah, no. But I went through a lot of articles and there isn't much still. There isn't much information out there.
Yeah, and I mean, hopefully that is going to start to change, you know, as more people, I guess, not to say more people, but as it becomes more comfortable to be discussed in just in society in general, is like you said, like there's still a stigma just around even like the term, you know, just because of the history that it has. And mm-hmm. And then you add on like the combat sports element to it. I mean, just looking at the history of pro wrestling, like, you know, there's been so much like fear brought up around, like, you know, in terms of like blood transmittable diseases. Like, look at all of the different instances of like hepatitis being spread because of like Abdul the Butcher or stuff like that.
I remember an article and it actually, you know, kind of made me angry because hepatitis is actually a lot worse. Hepatitis A, B is a lot worse than HIV.
Yes.
And it's not always played that way. And I remember there was an article because you go about Abdullah and all the stories and the situations there. And this article said it was about a man who was a professional wrestler and he ended up contracting HIV. He went to WWE. He found out he had HIV and he kind of went into his own realm. And I imagine just, you know, the shock of that, he didn't disclose it to partners and ended up giving multiple women HIV. But they played the story. If you think someone with hepatitis is bad, you know, there's someone with HIV. And it angered me, really, because it's like HIV, if managed correctly, is not terrible. You know, the first thing my doctors told me were, you're going to live a long and healthy life. You're probably going to be healthier than most people because you're going to the doctor's office more than anybody else. We're watching everything. Your pills almost make you superhuman. Not superhuman. I'm not Superman, but that'd be kind of cool. But yeah, you know, I had that information. And at the time in wrestling, there weren't a lot of stories. There was the hepatitis, which you brought on that Abdullah. You talk X-Pac and you talk Nigel McGuinness. So at the time I had that year, I had went to the Cauliflower Alley Club. That is a tongue twister.
It is.
and I had met Nigel McGuinness and Les Thatcher. At the time, you know, you could tell Nigel had just kind of retired. He was telling his story. Nigel McGuinness ended up getting hepatitis B, I believe, not C. And that ended up making him have to retire. And, you know, he quit the business. So I still, you know, had no clue about my status. And at the time, I learned a lot from Les Thatcher. I was trying to bring Les Thatcher into one of the local places I worked, MPX. I thought he would be a great mind to, like, give us a session. When I found out, all I wanted to do was, like, talk to like-minded people. And I reached, and I thought it was a shot. You know it's not the exact same, but I reached out to Les Thatcher, said, hey, here's my situation. Could you put me in contact with Nigel McGuinness? And he was actually one of the first people within the business that I talked to that kind of, like, not put my heart at ease, but, like, understood the pain, the frustration, the hurt I was going through, the darkness. And, you know, him even telling me, he's like, if anybody tells you, you know, it's just going to get better, you know, right away, he's like, they're wrong. You know, it's not going to be easy. And if you want to fight to do this, you're going to have to. He's like, but in reality, like, there's no reason you can't wrestle with HIV as long as you're on your medication and doing all that. He's like, it won't be an easy journey because you're not going to be accepted everywhere, which is not a lie. It's something I still face to this day. You know, but he was the first one to, like, just give me this, not, I guess, clarity, just motivation. And while I didn't use it then, cause I was young, I was hurt. I was not physically and mentally and emotionally ready to take on that challenge. It took years, but it's stuff that still ring in my head, you know, of the words of encouragement that Nigel McGuinness gave to me. I was lucky to have those words.
I mean, I can imagine just having someone that you can kind of commiserate with.
Mm-hmm.
It would be just by itself something that would be beneficial because, you know, there aren't a lot of people in the world of pro wrestling that specifically, at least publicly, specifically deal with this sort of thing for yourself, much less whenever you add in, you know, hepatitis as well.
Hmm.
You know, so I can imagine, especially back in, like, 2013, 2014, and that sort of era.
And 2013, 2014, you know, still PrEP was new. I believe it came out 2012, 2013, around that time frame. It was still relatively new. And Undetectable, Untransmittable didn't start as a campaign and truth until 2015. So there's still this realm of, like, anything I want to do is done. It's done. I can't do it. I have to figure out something else with my life. Give it up, kid. You know, you're wasting your time.
Mm.
I was very lucky at the time. You know, I didn't wrestle, but I ended up going back to my local promotion. It was MPX in Dallas. They're still around in mid-cities, Dallas, Fort Worth, Dallas, Arlington area. And, you know, I talked to the owner there and just telling them, hey, you know, here's all the information. Here's all of this. I just want to have one mat, you know, I'm on my medication, I'm doing all this. I just want to have like one last goodbye match. And, you know, he's like, well, you know, you've always been great to us and everything like that. And I'd love to be able to help you. It's, you know, if they feel comfortable working with you, which has always been the thing. And in reality, I get it. You know, it is only today that I kind of changed my mind on that. Not willing to work, but I just want people to be willing to understand. But yeah, they gave me the opportunity to have a retirement match. And I've had like enough of those now because I can't give this business up. But it was one of those things where once you talk to somebody, once you give them the information, once you open those doors up, they're like, okay, yeah, I don't mind. I'm not scared. I'm not this. Or anybody who just, you know, has done any kind of research or has, usually it's people who have dealt with it, like yourself or me, or people like my mom had hepatitis C her entire life. So I knew of different diseases like that from an early age.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the hope, right? That the hope is that you present everything that has been done to better inform and to treat these sort of things, and that will hopefully like inform people that the truth about this sort of stuff, and that people won't fall back on the outdated information, the outdated perceptions of these sort of things.
That's the hope. The truth is they still do. You know, I started the journey of coming back because, you know, since 2013, I did try one other time to get back in the ring in 2016. And it ended up like just crushing my dreams of professional wrestling. I don't know if I went about it the right way. You know, at the time I was undetectable. I was fine. I was healthy. I was probably in some of my better shape, not best shape, better shape. And I wanted to start training again. And I reached out to some schools and I was like, you know, should I? And I was asking one of my close friends in the business, I won't disclose his name, but I was asking him, if, you know, should I say anything, you know, because I know I can't transmit it or anything like that. I guess he was confused at how HIV works, even after I had explained it to him. And he thought, you know, undetectable means you don't have it anymore. And he's like, yeah, go. And at the end of the day, I can't blame him. I took the choice. Like, I decided, hey, I'm going to go wrestle. I won't disclose it because I'm not at, in reality, putting anybody at risk because I can't transmit it. And it became a thing. It got blown up. And then it became, you know, Joshua City is out there blading and having hardcore matches. And, you know, and he's putting everybody, I'm like, I'm just training. And I was vilified and I was turned into this evil person. No matter what I said, you know, I'm like, I've had doctors, you know, tell me that it is okay. Doctors don't know. They don't know. They don't know our business. So they don't know what they're talking about. I don't think you're right on that, you know?
Yeah.
And how dare you, in reality, anything that it did was not illegal. You know, it's under what they would want to say their moral standards, you know, of putting your partner at risk. But, you know, I wasn't held by any statutes in Texas or anything like that. There isn't what is it called? I'm trying to think. It's not
like a commission.
It's not under a commission or anything. Yeah. And in any other regular sport, I could play. I could play football. I could play NBA or boxing, not boxing. Basketball or just regular sports, soccer, where scrapes and scruffs happen. But this, because like I said, it's a fraternity, I was just destroyed. You know, I had people who are wrestling at a really high level now, you know, go to one of the schools where my mentor, Ray Campos, he runs AAPW in Austin, Texas, wrestled as Papa Don for years, who is a gay man and one of the surliest, meanest men you'll ever meet. You know? But he's dad. Like he'll kick anybody's ass to make sure you're okay. And anyways, at the time, he didn't still own the school. It was owned by another. And this wrestler went to them and said, hey, did you know Joshua City has AIDS? And he's had it the whole time. And Ray Campos knew. And he's spreading it to everybody. And it was like, wow. You know, and it just hurt, especially someone that I admired and looked up to and wanted, you know, their opinion and wanted to get their criticisms because they were good and are good still to this day, you know, just to have that situation. And so that stopped me for, oh my God, years. I couldn't even look at wrestling without getting depressed.
You know? Yeah. I could definitely see how that would have that effect there. Was that part of the reason for like the relocation?
No, absolutely. Oh,
okay.
Not.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not one of those. I don't care.
No, that's okay. I was just making,
I ended up, so I'm originally from Dallas, Texas, you know, trained at the old PCW factory way after, you know, it existed with Lance Archer. And he had just left WWE at the time, but I trained with him and I left Dallas in 2019. I've been in the bar business actually 10 years now.
Oh, nice.
And when professional wrestling stopped, I put all my love and heart and passion into the bar business because it's very similar, believe it or not. It's entertainment. It's being ridiculous. It's putting events together that, you know, so I moved.
Especially in our world. Yeah.
Oh yeah. it's yes. So, yeah, I moved out here to help open a bar, failed in 2 months. And I went, I love San Diego. Yeah, I moved to San Diego. And I've been here, you know, bartending and being a promoter and doing events, promoting within nightclubs and everything, because I've always loved that. I've always been a theater kid. I've always liked to pull back. Like I like being the center of attention, obviously. If you're a wrestler, you do. You have an ego. it's just par for the course, but I also like seeing the full picture come together, and I like seeing the set design and the different talents and seeing the people go home happy or creating this, you know, memories and moments for people to hold on to.
No, I mean, I there are a lot of similarities between those worlds, and it makes sense that like the skill set for pro wrestling would translate over to that in terms of like running like an LGBTQ bar and that sort of thing. So no, it's cool that you were able to find another outlet for this, yeah, for the time that you were out of the ring. And you know, San Diego, always a hop in place for that stuff.
it's an interesting place. I love it to death. I think it's one of the most beautiful cities in California. San Francisco fights for that title for me because I love San Francisco too. Yeah. But too expensive for my taste.
I feel you.
I know you do. That old Bay Area is so expensive. Like it's so pretty, but no. And I barely afford it down here.
Lord. Okay, so I do want to talk more about like this journey that you've been on to get back into pro wrestling, but I have to ask now, knowing that you were trained by Lance Archer and just knowing like the different incarnations that we've seen, mm-hmm, of Lance Archer, like what was that experience like training under him?
So Lance at the time it was 2011. He had just gotten released from WWE. So he was a little in his head at the time. Sorry if you ever hear this, Lance, but you know, he was in his head at the time. I was the only student. Like he just got back, you know, doing some indie gigs. I'd saved up some money and trying to work something out with New Japan, but it wasn't a promise yet. We all know that it became so much more after that. But at the time he was, it was just me and him. There was no other person in the class. It was literally just me and him. And I'm so grateful to have had him, especially after his run in WWE, because Lance is one of those, like, you think it would be all about just show you the moves, whatever. He was so purposeful about, I'm going to show you psychology. And he would sit down to teach me psychology and why everything makes sense, especially like I was tiny. I was like 160, 5'11". I was tiny. And like, I remember one class training session, I was on all fours. He kicked me and I kind of sold it a little bit. And he's like, no. And he probably sat there for a good 15 minutes of like what it means to be kicked and by who. He's like, look at me compared to you. I'm 260 pounds. You're 160. You're giving up 100 pounds to me. He's like, you should be flying all over the ring. If Matthew here, he's your size, a little bit shorter than you. If he kicks you, you can sell it like that. That's cool. If so-and-so kicks you, it should be like this. He's like, you need to take all of that into account when you're doing it. Those are one of those sessions that I always remember. He would sit people down, even when he would go do seminars. You know, they think they'd be wrestling. Nope, sits them right on the ground, teaches psychology and the importance of psychology. And, you know, I can't even remember who trained him, but I know that's not where it came from, because he trained for a month and went to wrestling. He's learned a lot. It was great learning under that tree. And it was a weird time because I was like slowly coming out at the same time. So it was like, I don't know how to feel coming into this, you know, very macho world, coming out and, you know, doing this. And this guy is like very macho, very into his faith. If anybody knows Lance Archer or Lance Hoyt, he's very devout to his faith. He loves his faith. But he is quite an interesting character. You know, it's not like he's going to be like, ah, you're gay, get out of here. You know, he's like, cool, whatever. He's like, I had a gay best friend in college, and sugar daddy got us a lot of things. I loved him.
That's great to hear.
Oh, not stories you'd expect to hear. Now, this is an off topic story, but it's one of my favorite stories of all time.
Go for it.
Okay. So we're in the car. It is me. Lance Archer is driving, another guy by the name of Bobby. And we're going down to San Marcos. Bobby and him, they're really close. But Bobby is, we call him Backwoods Bobby. And, you know, he had different mindsets that, you know, when you're from the South, can happen from time to time. But he was very like, you know, I don't like this and I don't like that. And, you know, he's like, I don't believe in interracial couples. And we're like, why? That's ridiculous. That's whatever. You know, and, you know, I don't believe in gay people. And like, okay, like, what are you talking about? I've never come out by this point. Like, I'm not hiding, but I'm not saying anything. So he's gone on this rant, and, you know, he's like, and I don't like little people. They scare me. Their heads scare me. He's just on and on. And so Lance is agging it on. He's like, yeah, what if your daughter comes home and she's dating a little lesbian black person? He's like, no, I can't have it. He's like, you're just going to push her away. You can't do this. No, I can't do that. Then he just started getting more absurd. And he's like, see, I hate that too. It's a guy wearing a cowboy hat and a car. It's ridiculous. So we're going. We've been talking for 3 hours. And we're almost there. And Lance goes, so you got a girlfriend? Or he's like, you in a relationship? I was like, yeah. You got a girlfriend? No. You got a boyfriend? Yeah. And he gets so excited. He's so happy because he knows, like, this is about to make Bobby flip. He's like, what? No, y'all set me up. Y'all set me up right now. You're not gay? No. And I was like, yeah, I'm gay. He's like, how long has your mom known you're not gay? No, she knows I'm gay. No, I can't believe it. You know, so the whole time he's like, Not gay. You're not gay. Still, you know, we've traveled together before. He's cool. He's cool as crap. But by the second day, he comes to me. He's like, you know, I've been watching you, and yeah, you're gay. But all those things I said, it doesn't make me hate anybody or whatever, and I don't hate you. You're a great person, and that, you know, that backpedaling. And he ended up marrying a black lady down the road, and you know, she wasn't little, but it's just one of those stories where it's, yeah, that's one of my favorite Lance Archer stories.
No, that's really interesting because like it's almost like in real time you're seeing a person who espouses this like xenophobic and like homophobic beliefs, and then immediately when they meet like a gay person in real life,
It's done.
Exactly, it's the
They're like,
same
oh, they're a
arguments.
person.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same arguments that we see all the time, especially in today's political climate, of like humanizing communities just because all these people that are spewing this rhetoric and like trying to make these legal changes to like outlaw like various like trans health care
Right. It's
initiatives
because
and
they don't want it to be humanized. Once you start showing it in person, then you know it's like, oh, you're turning my kid. No, we're humanizing it and showing that they're people. We're not showing anything different. You act as if these people are, you know, evil, and that's far from it. There are some evil people in every community. Absolutely. There are
exactly.
some bad seeds in anything, and that can't be held to the whole community, and we shouldn't hold it to the whole community of any community. But like, yeah, for us to not, we have to humanize it. We have to be able to show that, you know, that like no matter what, we're still us, you know. And
Yeah.
our journey in the LGBTQ wrestling world, like that's been a nuts journey, especially over the what last 4 years, I want to say. It's really like exploded.
Yeah, like 4 or 5. Yeah.
Yeah, it just my day there was nobody, you know. I mean, there are a lot of boys, but you know, being an open gay man in Texas wrestling, there's a fair share that come to you like, I'm not playing this game.
It's a rarity.
You'd be surprised. There's at least
Yeah.
one in the group.
Yeah. All right, Jens, thank you so much for tuning into LGBT in the Ring. We'll get right back into the thick of things, but I do want to take a pause real quick and say thank you to some amazing people that make this show as rad as it is. Starting off with Daniel Quasar, the Progress Pride flag designed by Daniel Quasar is a product of Progress Initiative. You can find out more at quasar.digital. A big thank you to Sarah and the Safe Word for the show's theme song, Formula 666, off the album Red Hot and Holy. You can find them on Twitter at STSWBand, and you can check out their music on both Spotify and Bandcamp at sarahandthesafeword.bandcamp.com. Check out independentwrestling.tv for the best in current and classic independent pro wrestling, including live events from top independent promotions worldwide. You can use our promo code LGBTRingPod or visit tinyurl.com/IWTVLGBT and peruse their entire library over there at independentwrestling.tv. Once again, promo code LGBTRingPod or go to tinyurl.com/IWTVLGBT. Check out that service. You can follow the show on Twitter at LGBT RingPod. You can follow me on Twitter at WonderboyOTM. And if you're into video games, definitely check out my video game news show, the Mr. Video Game Super Show. I co-host that with Twitch streamers Slacker Kite and Lady Merowyn every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over on twitch.tv/deadsonentertainment. It's your weekly roundup of gaming news, and it's always a blast. So once again, check that out every Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at twitch.tv/deadsonentertainment. Sun like the star. We'll be right back with more LGBT in the Ring.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
That actually, that's a good question to ask you, because like obviously a lot of this explosion that we've seen happened as you were kind of away from the ring before you made the next try to get back in 2021 or 20, I can't remember exactly when you went to Santino Bros, but what was it like for you on the outside kind of looking in to see this growth and explosion of LGBTQ identities within pro wrestling?
It is what excited me again. It's one of those things that made me go, screw this, I can do this. Like, in particularly, you know, the rise of the infamous Effie. Like,
yes,
I you know, a lot of people have different feelings of him. At the end of the day, he, like, you know, in the straight wrestling world, they're like, oh wow, you know, he just says whatever he wants. I'm like, in my world, that's any homo on a Monday or Tuesday.
Like, exactly.
Like, this guy has sat at my bar, I'm sure. Like, I've heard this. Like, screw you and screw this. This is our place now. Us homos, we're taking over. Like, that's why I love Effie. Like, he doesn't care. And he's so brash. And he has opened doors because he's so brash. And he hasn't cared if it cut him off or not, because, you know, he doesn't need it. He does it full time, but at the same time, it's like, he just has this, I'm doing what I love and I'm going to do it this level and screw y'all if y'all don't like this or that, you know, and I'm going to show you that there's other people like me that can do this that are just as good or great. Like, he was just getting started with Effie's Big Gay Brunch, was supposed to happen in 2020. And I don't think the first one happened until 2021, I believe.
It, or maybe it ended up happening
in 2020.
Yeah, it was later in 2020, because it was initially for WrestleMania weekend in Tampa in April. But then with the pandemic, it got pushed back to October of 2020 whenever the collective came back.
It was in Indiana, correct?
Yeah, it was in Indianapolis. Yeah.
Indianapolis. But yeah, you know, everything that he's done with the Big Gay Brunch. The only thing I fault him with that is being a gay man and there is no set design or over the topness. That, and it really bothers me, especially knowing he's very close to my age. We grew up with the ridiculous WWE sets that made me love set design. And I'm like, why don't we do that? But besides that, like, putting a spotlight on people I would have never seen before and getting to see, like, Pero. Pero is one of those that, as I've reached my journey, just, I reach out to people. Like, that's the great thing of social media. I'm like, I'm just going to DM this random guy and said, hey, can you give me any advice? And Pero has been so sweet to me and given me such good advice of, like, how to combat, how to fight, how to get back in there, and just been a big papa. I consider him the big papa of the LGBTQ wrestling community. Effie's the crazy uncle, and, you know,
you're not, that's not far off.
No, it's not. You're like, that crazy uncle, but he's got a point.
Oh yeah, he always has a point.
Yeah. So, but back to your question, yeah, it ignited the fight for me, and seeing what Effie was doing and seeing what all these others were doing, and just seeing this resurgence happen, especially, it was 2019, 2020. I feel like 2020, 2021 is where, like, it started exploding, because you started to see more of these Effieisms go out there and more stuff based outside of Pride Month, you know, and more shows that were happening that were LGBTQ led still can be more. And it made me reach out to a school, you know, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to be straight open. Like, I decided at that point, Like, the journey isn't to become a pro wrestler again. The journey was to educate people and to open eyes and to maybe open doors for others. Because, you know, I'd never met anybody else that was HIV positive or had done wrestling, but I knew there had to be. I couldn't be the only one. There's no way, man. There's absolutely no way. And so I reached out to a school, even though down the road, the school, it was BS, but, you know, told my story, said what I had to say, and they're like, yeah, we don't care. And that gave me enough, like, fuel to just, like, boom, I got to do this. I got to get in shape. I got to start fighting. And I put a post out on social media and Facebook, and it said, you know my story, you know, in 2013, I became HIV positive. I lost a dream of professional wrestling and I thought I would never get it back. But I realize now that I've got to fight for that. I got to stand up. I got to help show other people that just because you're HIV positive doesn't mean that you can't do anything that you want to do. And while I know it's going to be a fight and a struggle with my own past and what I've went through, I've got to stand up and I've got to do this. And I don't know how long it will take, but I'm doing it. So I put that out on social media, and that got the attention of now a friend of mine. But at the time, I didn't know him. I was living in San Diego. This was January 2021. I was living in San Diego. Surprisingly, he's from Dallas, and he was a filmmaker. And so he reached out to me. He's like, hey, I love your story. I'm intrigued by it. Can we get on a call? And I'm like, cool. This person, his name's Jeremy Word. And I tell him my story and I go into deep detail on it. And he, you know, kind of like talking with you and everybody else, that he didn't know. And he's like, I'm a gay man and I really didn't know about HIV or any of these things. Like, I didn't realize there was still this issue. I didn't think about these things with sports. He's like, this is a story I feel has to be told, needs to be told. And he basically picked up my project, which was never the plan, but it doesn't hurt when the opportunity, or the opportunity arises. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
And yeah. So like me and Jeremy, honestly, we've been working on this project. We've been filming this film since January of 2021. I want to say actually close to like March, April, and going on this journey. And I tell Jeremy this all the time. I said, I got to give you a lot of credit because I got to see me from your lens and you made me want to fight more and you got me excited and you got me feeling my story is worth telling and that it needs to be out there. Even, you know, when I thought it did and then I wasn't sure. And he's like, no, screw this. You got to go out there. You can do this. He's like, we're doing it. You know, he would keep motivating back when I said, well, if I get to train. And then he's like, he says, don't say that anymore. I'm like, what are you talking about? Don't say that anymore. Don't say what? Don't say if. Say when. He's like, because you are going to train. And that's when I had reached out to Santino Brothers. And I had talked to them. And at the time, Joey Chaos, who runs Santino Brothers, great guy. I have a lot of love and respect for. He actually ended up opening his doors for me. And he was quite concerned. You know, but he was quite concerned and he wanted as much information as he could get. And I was like, absolutely, as you should. And as I want you to, and as I go through this journey, I don't want you to like, he's like, oh, I feel dumb for asking this question or that. And I'm like, no, ask them. How do we get better? If you don't ask them, that's the whole idea. And so, you know, I was able to give him all of this information. And it was really funny, you know, when we finally got to sit down and train together and we got to talking about it. And it was when I was like, you know, there's people in porn that have HIV and still do porn. He's like, why didn't you lead with that? I worked for XCW that was owned by a porn company. That makes so much sense to me. I was like, well, I didn't think to do that. He's like, I would have completely understood then.
What was it like to kind of get that validation though from Joey and to be able to actually get back in the ring as Santino Bros for the first time?
It was interesting because it was still separated from all the classes, and I never got to train with anybody outside of Joey and some students that I had actually met. We did an online wrestling course, believe it or not, which is actually one of the better things I saw. You know, it focused on teaching psychology, teaching mic work, and the importance of these three different things, teaching the basics, how to treat people and everything like that. One of the coolest things I've seen that I don't think a lot of schools do, Santino Bros does. Awesome. Like, awesome. But getting in that ring that day of, like, I was just zoned in. I was focused. I was like, I have so much to do here. Like, and that's in my head. I'm just like, I have so much to do here. I know I'm going to be out of shape. Like, getting in that ring is always extremely difficult. Nobody prepares you for that. There's no cardio like that. It's terrible. But so getting in that ring, it was just great. I kind of lost the question a little bit, but
no, you're fine.
It was like, it was validating. It was validating. It was like, cool, I can do this. I'm getting an opportunity. I have another chance. There's still going to be another hurdle, but this person who I respect, who I understand, is giving me this opportunity and helping me regain what I may have lost over the years, which, you know, you're out of it. You still regain a lot of it, but, you know, you've got to relearn a little bit. Not much, but a little bit. But
yeah, I mean, there's always stuff.
Yeah, there's always stuff. But, like, it just felt so good. And I bring up Jeremy. He was there filming this. And he's like, dude, you were so focused. It was ridiculous. He's like, you were just in this zone of, like, you're going to kill something. I was like, I just felt I had to. Like, I had, you know, I set my own camera up, you know, and filming every little thing. And I'm everything that I'm doing, because as I thought to myself, when I come back, I can't hiccup. I can't have any hiccups. I've got to be perfect. I got to, you know, none of us can be perfect. But in my head, it was, I don't want to give anybody any ammunition. I don't want anybody to have any ammunition to come back and attack me and go, see, that's exactly why. That was a big deal. You know, and I wanted to be, you know, a perfectionist, even though I never was that, you know, even though I would have been more of a comedy act, because that's how I am anyways. I'm ridiculous. But even the comedy, I'm like studying it just right, you know, getting every detail of how the movement would be. I studied boxing so I could stand out with footwork and different things. And just at that time frame, it was like I was all in. And we trained for a good bit until October. And it was hard. The conversation just stopped. And, you know, oh, I'm busy right now. And, you know, there's a lot going on. And which he was, he, you know, he'd just gotten out of COVID and everything like that. There was a lot of regulations on what he was doing. His main coach wasn't there, and it was mainly just him and his wife. And he hadn't really, you know, he's trying to do a lot. He was getting a lot of students really fast, but, you know, it just never came back. That conversation never came back. I reached out to him. I said, did the door close? No, door didn't close. Still open. Can we talk? Crickets. And, you know, it's one of those things, like, I'm not saying anything bad about Joey. We all have our reasons for anything it may be. And, you know, the fear of what this is has scared a lot of people. He gave me the only opportunity in California that anybody had. Well, I got to watch that word. He gave me the first opportunity in California after, you know, he gave me my first opportunity in California to start training and try to get back into this wrestling scene. And that allowed me to meet, you know, some awesome people and reach out to people and tell them my story.
So at what point do you, like, meet Marco? Because obviously, like Marco running the full queer shows over the last year or so now has been a major force in the Bay Area for the LGBTQ pro wrestling community. At what point does Marco like ring you up and say, "Hey, maybe we got a spot"?
See, that's why I stopped myself because I knew that was coming next. TV and podcasts.
Yes.
So the first time I meet Marco isn't even in person. It is through Facebook. It's through one of the groups that he admins, which is, let me get the name right. This is why I wrote things down. The LGBTQ plus wrestling community on Facebook. It's a Facebook group. And, you know, I just paid attention. I paid attention, you know, he's wrestling. He's doing things. He's in San Francisco. He's really close. Oh, Full Queer is coming about. Interesting. And so I reach out to him and just like, hey, do I know you? No, you don't know me, but you know, I'm on my journey back. You know, I have HIV, this story, da, da, da. And it's been a great friendship for over a year. And we've met twice in person.
That's always how it goes.
Yeah, you know, but like we text every day. And one of the great things about Marco is Marco got back in or got into the business in, I don't want to say his age wrong, but later in life. You know, I want to say he's closer to 40, but Marco, if you're hearing this, please don't hurt me again. Like, if I get this wrong, I'm sorry. You look great for your age, look barely over 25. But, you know, he got into wrestling later. He didn't think he could do it when he was younger. And he, you know, he's all about making the LGBTQ community better. He's all about making the LGBTQ community better. And it's not about like himself really, and about making him over, you know, and he's done all these things like Full Queer, and everything that he's done with Full Queer has been incredible. Like he's the guy that's made the difference, I feel, in California, one of the guys who's making a big difference. I definitely got to give some love to Dark Sheik and everything she's done as well. Like, I can't take that away. But funny enough, it's all in the Bay. It's not down here. Not down here in SoCal. No. We're too Southern for that, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, that's how I first met him. And I didn't even get to meet him in person until January of 2022, this year. Oh my goodness. Yeah, this year. And I went to a Full Queer show. And it was one of those things. I don't know if I told Marco this, but it was hard to watch it because it was like, I want to be there. I want to be in this. Man, I want to do this. God, it's right there. It's right in front of me, and I can't be in a ring, man. And I ended up reaching out to Marco because I know they did Barrison, and I know he had been working on Folsom, but Folsom wasn't confirmed yet. And, you know, me and my partner were planning to go to Folsom, which we did. Had a lot of fun. Got to see the show. Probably one of the best wrestling shows at a random street fair. Nobody would think that you'd see a wrestling show at a BDSM kink street fair, but holy crap. Vote for it as a, that's my own plug. My own opinion, vote for it for best show of the year. But... Full Queer at Folsom Street Fair. But I reached out to him. He's like, hey, I'm not sure if I reached out to him and said, hey, you have a spot, you have an opportunity, I want a chance. And you know, it's something we've been working on with the film as well, but it's also I want this opportunity. And he said, I can't promise you Folsom. That's all still tied up, but I promise you Barrison and you can wrestle me. Said perfect deal. And that's how that kind of set that rocket up. And me not knowing if that would be the end of it or if it would lead to more.
After getting into the ring with Marco and having the match and having this moment to kind of like realize that you did make it back, at least for one day, you made it back to that place that you wanted to be at. Did that leave you wanting more, or was that one of those things that, like, if this is the last time I put on the gear and step into a ring like this, I'm happy leaving it there?
No, I paid too much for that gear. I need to use it more. No, sorry. But it did leave me wanting more. Wrestling is a drug, man. It is an addictive drug. It makes no sense. I've called it bastardized theater in the round for years because that's exactly what it is. Good guys and bad guys and trash and over the topness, you know, but it is so encapsulating when you can control that audience, when you can get them behind you, when you can make them believe, make them cry, make them angry, yell. And, you know, that just that glimpse in there with him, you know, I didn't even do anything much because I knew I wouldn't be able to move at the ability I'd like to, you know, I did good basic work. And it was like, man, there's more. I want to do more. I want to do this. But it was, even at that time, it was like, where do we go from here? It was, you know, done. We filmed everything for this documentary. And, you know, we know our hopes is there's more, you know, to put out there. But it's like, I feel stuck. And in reality, like, you reaching out to me, and it may be another door that's meant to be opened, you know, being able to tell the story to whole new genre of people who've never even known that I've existed. Because in the full scheme of things, like, I'm just a pawn player. I am the character in which the story is using to propel the story that really needs to be told. And that is about HIV, that is about the stigma, that is about changing the mindsets of the new generation or the old generation, honestly, you know. Through my journey, I thought I was the only one. And I have learned there's so many other people. Like, I met people who wrestled in the 80s and worked as Mil Mascara's accountant and, you know, ended up like becoming paws and getting out. I've had kids. I've had guys training who wanted to wrestle, and they looked for articles and articles like I did. And then they found my post and reached out to me and wanted to know my story. And then just seeing that there are so many people that, like, have that dream, but can't express it or have been turned away. You know, I have heard stories of people being turned away and, you know, promoter or trainers going, man, I don't know if I would have done that again. It was a different time. People changing their minds, perceptions changing, but we still have so far to go to change all those perceptions.
No, I mean, it's much like the boom of LGBTQ identities in pro wrestling. Like, these things always are a journey, and they take their own time in a lot of ways. But as evidenced by what we've seen with the former there, like, a community can't be stopped when they don't want to be.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And like you said, you have people like Effie, who's out there doing great things. You have Dark Sheik, you have Marco and Jetta doing some great things. You have more on the other coast that I don't know who they are, but I know that they're out there and they're making a name. Dylan McQueen is busting his ass to do things. You have all these people who's trying to change the perception and trying to get more opportunities. Like, that's some of the big conversations Marco and I have had. Like, I plan on working with them more. I plan on trying to help get full queer all throughout California, different street fairs or whatever, you know, if they take the help, you know, which we've already talked about it, but you know, but like, because we want to reach more people, we want to get out there. And if my role isn't wrestling and my role is helping behind the scenes, I don't mind that either. you know, because in reality, I love that kind of thing too. There's so many stories to be told and that deserve to be told. And I think mine's one of them, but at the same time, that my job is just to break down it. I say that my job is just to break down the door. And I realize that as the first one through the door, as the first one paving the path, I'm going to take the most damage, and I'm going to be the martyr. But hopefully that means there's a whole new generation of people behind me that's going to not have to go through what I ever had to go through with this business. And I don't have to feel the pain that I felt, man. And that right there, that would be amazing to see that, to see someone wrestling. It's no big deal if they're pause or not.
Yeah. No, I am right there with you. Like that would be an amazing thing to see. Amazing thing to see. Well, Joshua, this has been a powerful and outstanding conversation. Like I greatly value this conversation personally. I greatly value you taking the time to come on the show and talk about your journey and your triumph now that you have been back in the ring. There you go. A long journey, well made though. I'm very curious to see the documentary as well. And also, like you talked about SoCal, Mania Weekend's coming to LA next year. There's more than likely going to be a big gay brunch.
Yeah, there is. There very much is. That would be an interesting movement.
Who knows?
But speaking real quick, you know, the film we're making, like I said, with Jeremy Word, it's called The Undetectable Wrestler. And so, like I said, it follows my journey of starting this dream back to getting in the ring and to whatever else may happen, you know, reaching out and going through some of the situations I mentioned earlier and reaching back into a lot of that pain. It's one of those things we're getting ready to hopefully push it out there. You know, Jeremy gave me permission to talk about it. I'm like, cool, because I've been wanting to talk about this for a while. And I think it's one of those that if we can get out there and get in front of the right people, it's gonna cause some controversy. Hopefully, I hope it pisses some people off. In reality, it's what this business is about. I don't want to hear those people talk crap, but I want the conversation to be started.
Yeah. And that's the important part, is like getting that conversation started and letting it continue to the point that, you know, people understand.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Are you able to like talk about like how the film is going to be released, or like do y'all have that knowledge
we
yet?
We are still figuring that out. You know, we're definitely trying to get it out there. I'm not sure his specific plans, but I know it's one of those things that he's been working on it forever. He's spent, like, he literally dedicated, you know, a good year of his life to just this. And it was really amazing to see someone do that. So as soon as I can get more information, I will give it to you, Brian, for sure.
I appreciate it. And I will be eagerly awaiting it because, you know, we need more of our stories out there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Joshua, this has been awesome. Let everybody know where they can find you online and anything you might have coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me on Instagram. I use probably the most at JoshuaCity91. Forgive all the flagrant sexy pictures, but you know, and if you're in San Diego and SoCal, come out to one of my events if I'm putting one together. So hopefully I'll be putting wrestling events together soon too. That's one of my goals.
We need more of these kind of events.
We need so many more, man.
Exactly. Yeah. I just did a story on like Cincinnati having their first like LGBTQ focused show. So like we're seeing more cities pop up. Every city needs to have their own.
I've been working to try to get it into the Pride Festival here. And last year we had an opportunity and they said, we're not sure if we want to spend that money. said, cool. Reach out to him this year. I said, hey, I'll raise the money. I'll cover the insurance. They're like, we just don't want it. I was like, cool. I'm going to show you why you're missing out.
Exactly.
That's my mindset. Like, cool. You don't want it. You know, me and Marco, we're going to work together. We're going to make you wish you didn't. I'm going to work with all of them. Like,
hey, that's just how it goes, but it's all right.
I got that FB spirit going, like, screw you.
Yes. Joshua, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome, man. Thank you.
My thanks once again to Joshua for taking the time to sit down and go deep into his journey there. You know, I'm very, very excited to see this documentary, The Undetectable Wrestler, whenever it does release, however it is released. I'm sure, like Joshua said, I'm sure that we'll find out more information about that whenever it is ready to be released. And it's going to be a must-watch thing for myself. I think it's going to be a must-watch for a lot of people in the community, whether you're into pro wrestling or not, just the journey and that Joshua has been on, it's remarkable. And it's not over. I hope that it's not over. I hope that he's able to get some more time and work out of that gear that he had made, because one, it's good looking gear. Two, you know, Joshua has an altruistic motive to wanting to be in the ring. It's not just about himself anymore. It's not just about chasing a dream. It's about wanting to help the community. And that's really what the LGBTQ pro wrestling movement is about at its core. You know, obviously there are other motivations for anybody that gets into pro wrestling and myriad different ones, but at the heart of this movement, from everything that I've seen, it's about moving us forward and moving understanding forward. And that is the message that I get from Joshua whenever I talk to him there. So thank you all for tuning in again to the show. That's going to do it for us this week. Remember, the QWI 200 will release December 9th through the 15th. So keep your eyes on outsports.com there. Voting for the QWI Awards for this year ends tonight at midnight Pacific. So get your nominations in. Final ballot will be released on November 21st, and the final ballot voting will close on December 6th at midnight Pacific. So you got some homework to do, I guess, here as we near the end of the year, heading to December, and get ready for some real great year closers. Obviously, like last week, we saw Giselle Shaw and Jordynne Grace just have a complete slobber knocker on Impact. We have coming up on Thanksgiving weekend, you got Defy coming back. Randy Myers returned finally to Defy, and he's going to be competing in the the six-way ladder match to determine the undisputed Defy heavyweight champion, which, you know, Randy has that belt right now, but he's been gone for a while, so we'll see what happens there at Fight Wave. But I don't know. There's a lot to be excited about going forward. We didn't even get into the Big Gay Brunch UK stuff, which is an amazing announcement, even though it was mired by the timing with the Progress announcement and all the fallout that's come out around that. But there's a lot to be excited about. There's a lot to be talking about when it comes to the world of LGBTQ pro wrestling as we near the end of 2022 and head into another year of this blissful, beautiful, sometimes frustrating, sometimes infuriating thing that we all share a common love for in pro wrestling. It really, really is a complicated favorite in a lot of ways, but a favorite nonetheless. Well, that's going to do it for us this week. Until we meet again, y'all stay messy. Wash your hands, wear your mask, get vaccinated and boosted if at all possible. That goes for monkeypox as well. And January 14th. Bye. Everybody's ready to die. They didn't see it coming from the top of the bridge. She made a deal with the demon so a lover could live. For the moon inside. Devil is driving.